Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and on the line is the Gypsy Musher himself, Hugh Neff, calling in from his home in Tok, Alaska. Hugh, how's it going?
Going good, Robert. A little tired, a little fatigued. Been running around in circles all over Alaska the last couple of weeks, but you got the quest all taken care of as well as far as food drops, and we did vet checks yesterday in Fairbanks. And right now, Nicole and I are just working on getting booties organized and different supplements that we have to bag into Ziploc bags. And there's always something going on this time of year, you know, where you're going to do so many miles, you're going to have to put a lot of prep time into it as well just to get the dogs ready.
It has been quite a while since we've had a show with you. I think since about, I don't know, maybe summertime since we've talked last. I know that you're just recently off of the Cusco 300 that finished up last week, and as you mentioned, the Yukon Quest food drops this week, and the quest will start in a couple of weeks, then on to Iditarod. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. And then, believe it or not, after Iditarod, I'm heading over to Scandinavia. I'm going to be doing some races in Finland and a race as well in Svalbard, which is an island just to the north of Norway, a place called Spitsbergen. So a lot of Norwegians coming over for Iditarod. I got two of my buddies, Turi and Tom Frodo from Norway, that are doing the quest. So I figured I'd pay them the compliment and come visit them afterwards.
Cool stuff. So that is not the Finnmark that you've run before. This is something different, right?
Yeah, it's just some shorter races. You know, as much as I enjoy racing and trying to be competitive, for me, the real mushers are all about exploring and getting out there and seeing new trails. So I love Alaska. I love the Yukon. But, you know, there's a big globe out there to explore, and I want to see as much of it as I can, and I want to do it by dog team.
Cool. So we had mentioned that you had just finished up, I guess it was the first race of the year for you, the Cusco 300. Maybe tell us a little bit about that. How did you finish? How did the dogs do? What do you think about the race itself? From the videos, it looked like you guys were pretty much on an ice skate rink the entire time.
Yeah,
how was
it? Yeah, it was very icy, and then at the halfway point, we had a lot of tussocks to go over. But it was fun. I hadn't done it in 5 years, and that I was kicking myself in the pants for not being back there sooner because, you know, it's great training. People, you know, want to complain about, you know, tough trails and stuff, but, you know, if you want to get your dogs ready for the bigger races, there's not a better race to do than the Cusco because you're going to see all types of weather out there, and you're going to see, of course, a lot of the top mushers in the state. The good race this year for the younger mushers, quite demanding physically. My buddy Pete Kaiser won it the second year in a row, and a lot of the native guys did great. Three of the top five were native, whether they were Inupiaks or, Yupiks or Gwich'in mushers, so that was pretty cool to watch. We did good. We came in seventh. I was actually hoping to come in sixth. It would have been the first time I'd ever beaten Jeff King in a race, and, of course, about 10 miles from the finish line, I heard the word trail from behind, and he moseyed on right by me like it was nothing. So I guess I'll have to keep on shooting for the stars. It's about the only musher that I've never really beaten in a race before. It's not like I'm out there to try to beat other mushers, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Jeff's the best mid-distance, long-distance musher in modern history. So it's always an honor to be on the trail with him. Team did good. Had a fairly veteran team, a lot of 5 and 6 year olds. In contrast, for the quest, I'll be running a lot of younger dogs. Some yearlings and 2 year olds. Main leader is going to be Bodie, Rosie, Mojito. Got a new star leader up and coming named Boppy, who's going to be a superstar. I'm calling him and Bodie the Bruise Brothers because they look like twins up in front, and they're just solid looking, you know, black huskies, almost look like small little wolves. They're maybe 40 to 50 pounds, not that big a critter, but they got, you know, that that energy that Bodhi just has and comes from Annie and from Bodhi's lines, which are Hans God lines. And he just, whenever you touch him, his whole body's just vibrating. So I've got a very hyper team. It's going to be a little bit of training out there, trying to keep them under control, harnessing the energy. It's nice knowing that I'm not really even considered to be one of the favorites. I think right now Brent Sass is pretty much in a league of his own as far as being dialed in with his dogs. It's pretty phenomenal to see how he's really taken an old school type of Joe Reddington type dog and just made it into a modern day machine. A lot of power in his dogs. So guys like him and Alan Moore right now, I'd say I'll be lucky to stay within a couple hours of them. But, you know, the Quest has a way of showing the teams its dominance. So when I worry about the Quest, I try not to worry too much about the other mushers as much as I do the trail conditions and, you know, how Mother Nature's acting up.
So let's talk about Mother Nature here in just a second. The Quest field, I believe, is only 25. Is that the normal amount, or is that small or large in recent years?
Yeah, it's about normal, and for me, it's perfect. I'm not really didn't get into dog mushing to hang out with a million people out in the woods, to tell you the truth. So for me, Quest racing is the perfect. Same thing, it was about 26 or 7 teams for the Cusco. That's a nice amount of dog teams out there. You know, I respect Iditarod and obviously, a race is always on everybody's list when they're racing in Alaska. But, you know, with 86 teams, it's a little crazy out there. It's not too much peace and quiet on the trail. Where the Quest, I've been on the Quest trail for up to a week by myself without seeing another musher and totally loved it. I was just, you know, in heaven. For me, dog racing is more about enjoying the history of it as well as your dogs and especially the trail. And the Quest trail for me is awesome. And even though there's only, you know, a third of the Iditarod field in the Quest, it's a great field, a lot of interesting characters from all over the globe. Just met a girl who's doing the race. I think they're from Wyoming. Her name's Lori Neef, and she is like 19 years old, and she's got Berkowitz dogs. And I'm looking at these dogs, and they're nearly as big as she is. So it's always fun to hang out with the rookie mushers as well as the veterans. And, you know, a lot of these guys I've shared many years on the trail with. A guy like Dave Dalton, I think this is his 25th or 26th Yukon Quest. He's got the record, and this will be my 16th. So I'm the second sourdough on board, I guess, this year. Which is funny because, you know me, I'm a kid at heart, and to have all these younger mushers call me sir or old man or whatever, that doesn't really, for me, that's not a sign of respect. That just sort of gets me motivated to show everybody that, you know, my better days are in front of me and not behind me.
Good stuff. So it's about Mother Nature. You know, here in the Matsu Valley, it's really only snowed once, and then just a couple of dustings here and there. We're running on almost solid ice around here on our trails, which makes for training miles pretty difficult in terms of setting hooks and all that. And you had mentioned before we went on, you had about a foot where you guys are. How are things in terms of training where you're at, and how does the Quest Trail look? You know, Mother Nature is kind of teasing us a little bit about what's to come.
Well, I think it's going to be possibly similar to the Cusco Trail. It's going to be quite fast and icy. Which, you know, the wind on the Yukon River can really sweep off that snow and polish it up. So it could be a pretty demanding trail. That's why it's better to have a well-trained team that's under control compared to a fast team that you're just flying around. That's how you're going to get injuries. Fortunately for me, I've been doing a lot of, as I get older, I'm 48 now, I'm doing a lot of training with smaller teams, and I think that hopefully will pay off. I've been running 8 to 10 dogs, maybe 12. Not really into running huge teams anymore. I think you learn more about the individual dog if you run smaller teams. And we did a training run. Nicole Summersee and myself went up to Tanana to visit my buddy Stan Gray and Charlie Wright and Lester Earhart and all my friends about a month ago. And so that was a good experience for the younger dogs. lots of hills, leaving Manly, which is where, you know, Brent trains. But just doing the Cusco is a nice eye-opener on Mr. Sass and how focused he is, because I'm figuring he has nearly 3,000 more miles on his dogs than me, which is, there's a reason why he's doing so well. It's his whole focus every day, and hats off to him, because he's had a pretty, you know, up and down roller coaster year, and it was good to see Brent do good in the Cusco. I know he's got a big following in the Quest, and for these races, whether it's him or Matt Hall or some of these younger mushers, for dog mushing to stay vibrant, we need the younger mushers to do well. It just can't be, you know, the Martin Boozers and Jeff Kings doing well every year.
You know, if we could ask a training question, I got this question asked to me on Facebook during the Cusco. I know Ken Anderson posted a little picture about a little chain that he uses on his runners to kind of stabilize himself on the ice. Do you do anything like that? And if you do or don't, can you tell our more novice mushers or listeners why you do that, and you know, how does that operate, that system?
I don't do it unless I'm going down Eagle Summit. I might put some chain on the runners to try to, you know, slow down the dogs. And I know Brenda Mackey, during the Cusco, she was traveling behind me. She broke her brake, and without that locking mechanism, she wouldn't have been able to keep her, you know, sled under control. I typically, you know, will put a snow hook down, and if or two, and if it's not the greatest conditions for setting a hook, I'll just flip the sled over on its side on top of the snow hook. And usually in conditions like that, I'm always trying to stop a team on an uphill grade too. I'm not going to do it, you know, in a flat icy spot. But that's another reason why you have to be very focused on how you put your team together. You might not necessarily even know your younger dogs might have more energy and be faster if they're a little bit, you know, more out of control than an older vet in these races. Until the team mellows out after a little bit, it might make more sense to go at a slower pace and keep those younger dogs closer to you by the sled and let those vets set the pace, so the whole team. But a lot of it goes back to training, and obvious in races when you see teams that are well-mannered, that musher typically is spending a lot more time camping out, or, you know, just getting their dogs under control as far as teaching them how to rest properly. It's definitely a big part of younger dogs racing, is getting them to learn how to mellow out when they're not running, because, you know, they're all full of energy, and they're all curious about what's going on, and they want to see all the other dog teams and all that.
So speaking of mellowing out, just before airtime, I saw a video on your Facebook page of Walter kind of hanging out there with Dave Matthews in the background, and then a cup of coffee where the cup said Master of Disaster. You know, when I think of you, Hugh, I think of that scenario in all of those elements. Tell us a little bit about that video. Maybe give us an update on Walter. You know, he's kind of the face of the team, so to speak, and I know he's getting older and, you know, kind of enjoying his retirement. Tell us about Walter a little bit.
Coming right up to me, it's like he knows we're talking about him, right, Walter? Well, you know, he's 11 now, and he can still run. I mean, he did the run with us to Tanana, but, you know, he's got over 35,000 miles on him, and to respect him, there's no reason to keep making him do all these races when I have plenty of other dogs that deserve a chance. So he's more of the yard trainer. He's running around loose, just letting everybody know who's in charge still, and plays with the puppies or the girls in heat. But a lot of time indoors, you know, he's a bigger guy, 70 pounds. So the warmer conditions inside are good for him. And the Dave Matthews, I've got a bunch of different music on TV that you were so gracious to give me a couple years ago. And so usually in the mornings I'll play some type of Dave Matthews or, I don't know, U2 or some type of music to sort of get us all in a good mood and properly focused. I even have a stereo speakers put up in the dog yard too. So I'll play some Tom Petty or Hobo Jim or what have you for the dogs. I even play some Rammstein, which is a big band in Germany, or used to be. And the Massacre of Disaster is actually a nickname that my buddy Suey Kings gave me years ago. And I just was chatting with him. He and his German contingent will be coming for the Quest next week. And they've been coming for like over a decade now. Every year there's at least a half dozen, if not more, Germans that follow the trail. So it's just fun to see people who aren't really dog mushers, but just enjoy the whole soap opera of a bunch of people running around in the woods with their dogs for a week and a half.
So the Quest starts next weekend, is that right? The 6th and 7th, the 6th, I guess? On.
Yeah, and then the Quest 300 starts right afterwards.
And then you guys are there, I don't know, 9, 10 days or so, depending on where you're at in the field. Then a week or so off before Iditarod starts, is that right?
At least a week, maybe a couple of weeks. But, you know, in between then, I've got to deal with getting EKGs for Iditarod. And, of course, Iditarod has lots of meetings and various other things going on. I mean, even like after the vet checks yesterday, I had to go and pick up 10 bags of dog food, had to stop in Delta and get, you know, nearly 1,000 pounds of meat. So people would be amazed. I think we just jump on a sled and do these 1,000-mile races. They don't realize that nearly every day we're doing something, you know, with our eye on the big picture, which is being prepared for these races. I've done, you know, this will be my 27th and 28th 1,000-miler this year, so I've been through a lot of these. And for me, a big key is just trying to keep the passion alive, to tell you the truth. I still love doing it, and I love being with the dogs and enjoy the camaraderie with the mushers on the trail, but it's never quite like it is the first couple of years when you're just so intensely focused. So for me now, as I'm getting up in age, it's just trying to remember how lucky I am to do what I do and not take anything for granted.
Speaking of 20, you said 27th and 28th 1,000-milers, is that right?
Yeah, since 2000, so been a busy boy.
So do you still ever have any of those pre-race jitters when you're heading out there on the Yukon Quest or the Iditarod, you know that kind of butterfly in your stomach, like, here we go again?
Not really. I haven't had that for quite a long time. I'd say the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years at least, it's more like, get me the heck out of this city. Get me back to the woods where we belong. I think a lot of mushers feel that way. The stress is all the hype before the race and the meetings and the banquets. And, you know, it's part of racing, and you have to, you know, it's all a big family, and you have to support every facet of the dog event. But realistically, we don't feel comfortable until we're back on the sled with our dogs going down the trail in the middle of the night at 20 below. That's when we feel like that's when we are enjoying the moment. And what I mean by that is so many people, especially nowadays, are so focused on winning and their legacies and all this sort of stuff, when for any musher, you should just really look around the world at all the craziness that's going on with war and politics or what have you. And for us to live this lifestyle, we're quite lucky. That's why I really appreciate the smaller moments, whether it's a dog flipping over on its back and rubbing in the snow and shaking off the snow and wiggling their tail, or a little kid, you know, coming up in the village and wanting an autograph or whatever. I mean, stuff like that is what keeps me coming back.
Good stuff. So we have about less than 10 minutes left. I want to jump back into that trip over to Scandinavia. I know in the past you've loaded up several of your dogs and taken them with you, and that's an ordeal of itself. You got to get them through vet checks and all that stuff. Are you doing that again, or are you using other dogs? What's the plan?
I might bring one or two. I haven't decided yet, but realistically, these races that I'm doing aren't like a huge, you know, 1,000-kilometer race like the Finnmark Slope, but they're just shorter, you know, weekend-type races where I'm just getting together and I'll be doing some talks and presentations over there. And, you know, and like Svalbard, you know, I've heard there's areas where you are required by law to have to carry a gun because there's polar bears everywhere. So this is going to be for me more about exploring areas like Finland. I love that was part of the Finnmark race, and an old handler buddy of mine, Juho Ulipsia, lives in that area. My buddy Mats Pedersen from Sweden, who's doing the Iditarod, invited me to tag along. So I love the lifestyle, and it's not just these races. I like hanging out with the Sami Indians in Lapland, and you know, they're more like a reindeer type of native than a dog mushing type. But that's what it's about for me. I enjoy getting out and seeing how other people in other parts of the world run their dogs too, because not everything is done the way it is in Willow or Wasilla or Two Rivers or what have you. That's why I like doing the races in Bethel and in Kotzebue too, because you get out there in these, you know, whether they're Indian or Eskimo villages, their culture to me is so beautiful and so unique and rare in this world that I try to enjoy it every time I can.
Awesome stuff. So after you get back from Europe there, are you planning on doing the Kobuk again, and then you know, your spring tour as you normally do, sort of the, you know, the schedule of Hugh Neff, you know, one after
the other? No, actually this year Nicole's probably going to be running a team there, and she's actually doing a race during the first part of the quest. She's going to be doing the Denali Doubles with my buddy Paul Gebhardt, and then she's going to come with Summer after that and meet us in Dawson. So she's going to have a full schedule going on. But, you know, after I get back from Norway, I'll be getting ready for my school tour in May. And I already have teachers, you know, contacting me about dates for doing talks at their different schools on the East Coast or Midwest or South, what have you. A lot of these schools I've been talking to for, you know, over 10 years now. So they get all excited for it. And, of course, I'll probably be bringing Walter with me on that tour. Kotzebue, I've done like, I think, 7 or 8 times, and, you know, just because I'm not going to be doing it this year, I'll definitely be back there in the future. But a lot of these places like Bethel or Kotzebue, to tell you the truth, I want to go visit them in the summer and see what they're like the other time of year. I'm so used to seeing them covered in ice and snow. It would be nice to get out there and maybe do some fishing in the warmer elements.
And tickets are relatively cheap here. Anchorage, like $150 to go out that way. So it's pretty dang cheap. It's not one of those things where you got to have a arm and a leg of cash to fly over there. So, Hugh, one last question in regards to your school tour, then I want some contact info from you. Are you going anyplace new this year? I know you kind of add new places here or there. I know you've been to South Carolina, North Carolina, and Tennessee. Any place new this year?
No, I usually start off in Chicago, get a rental car, and then I just start going through Ohio, New York, down the eastern seaboard, cut through Atlanta or North Carolina, and then come back and just do a big circle. But, you know, I go where the demand is. So if there's teachers around the country that are looking for a presenter on dog mushing, I think I've been doing it long enough that people realize I put on a real good show. And they can contact me, Laughing Eyes Kennel at hotmail.com. Before I forget, a quick few notes. My buddy Hobo Jim will be playing at Ivory Jack's next week before the quest on, I believe, Thursday and Friday of next week. And I think we're maybe a little over 50% that we will be starting from Willow this year. I don't know if you've heard any rumors about that. You read stuff in the paper, but it's fun to start in Fairbanks, but it'd be cool to be back in the traditional trail, too. A lot of it just has to do with the steps in the gorge and how safe they are.
Yeah, I've heard the same things as you have. I know the powers that be, they're trying to do whatever they can to keep it closer to home, so to speak, there in Willow. Because I can imagine it becomes a logistical nightmare for just about everybody to have to go 350 miles up the road in a couple of days to make sure everything happens.
Yeah, last year we had to do it. We had to did the ceremonial in the rain, and then we had to drive through a snowstorm just to get to the starting line. So that was pretty crazy. And then, of course, the race was like 50 below the whole time. But kudos to Iditarod. It was a heck of a race, and all the villagers really enjoyed having the mushers visit. You know, Hoosler, that was awesome. That being said, you know, the traditional trail is obviously where they try to have it every year. And, you know, Mark Nordman has been running the show forever now, and he's going to do what's ever best for the overall field of mushers, and that's a good thing.
Good stuff, Hugh. Nice talking to you. It's been a while since we've caught up, so I'm glad to have you back on the air. Maybe we'll have you on after the quest there in that chaos between the quest and Iditarod. How's that?
Sounds great, Robert, and I just want to give a big shout-out to all my friends around the world and everybody, whether I visited you or whether you've supported us in any type of fashion. Really appreciate it. You know, it's QNF's just a name, but Laughing Eyes Kennel is a team that is spread out throughout the globe, and I really appreciate all of you who have stuck with me throughout the years and believe in what we're doing here.
Good stuff. If I don't talk to you, good luck on the quest, okay?
All right, Robert. Thanks a lot, bud.
Thank you. QNF, talk to you guys later. Goodbye.